Online, on digital, and on 103.5 FM. This is 3MBS Fine Music Melbourne.
Welcome to Reflections. I'm Doug Beecroft. At 32, 3MBS broadcaster Stuart Kelly is an accomplished and versatile pianist, teacher, producer, and artistic director. He has a Master of Music Studies from Griffith University and trained in performance studies at the Australian National Academy of Music in Melbourne, or ANAM, and he's now a Fellow of ANAM. As soloist and collaborator, he's performed at Australia's leading concert venues and festivals, and he's performed in New Zealand, China, Italy and the USA. He's on staff at the Melbourne Conservatorium and the Victorian College of the Arts Secondary School. Stuart is founder and artistic director of the Music by the Springs Festival and co-director of the Melbourne International Festival of Lieder and Art Song, or MIFLAS, an exciting event that will take place in a couple of weeks' time. Welcome to Reflections, Stuart.
Thank you, Doug.
What's it like being on the other side of the microphone, Stuart, because you broadcast in Melbourne in concert on Sunday nights on 3MBS?
I do, and it's a bit scary not knowing what you're going to ask me.
But I'm sure it'll be just terrific.
It's also nice not to be in control and have to worry about planning it.
Well, let's be totally out of control. You've got a really diverse career as a solo pianist, collaborator, teacher, producer and artistic director. Is having a diverse load of interests really an important aspect of your life?
I think it's very important. I mean, partly just to survive these days in this industry, you have to be able to do many things, and you unless you're, you know, very, very lucky, you really do have to be able to juggle lots of different things just to make a career for yourself. But more than that, I'm very interested in everything I do, and I feel very lucky that no two days are ever the same. And even within a day, I can shift gears five or six times sometimes between what I'm doing and what comes next. And it's certainly an interesting life.
Sounds like very skilled planning. Stuart, we're going to run straight to your first piece of music, which is a beautiful duet by Handel. Would you like to tell us about that?
Look, I only fairly recently discovered this piece, and I was driving along one day and heard it on the radio, actually, and was completely blown away by it. It's just a fantastic, joyous song. It's a very silly piece, actually. It's two women basically giggling about each other and their relationship with each other, and it just, I thought, would set a very nice mood to begin this conversation.
Oh!
Per abitere il rigore by Handel. And that was sung by Sabina Davila, soprano, and Leah Desondre, mezzo-soprano, with Le Concert d'Astrée, conducted by Emmanuel Haim. You're listening to Reflections. I'm Doug Beecroft, and back to my guest, Stuart Kelly, Australian pianist, 3MBS presenter. Stuart, I'd like to talk about your early years and growing up in Brisbane. What was Stuart like as a little boy?
Oh, well, I prefer not to think about it, but it was...
How would your family and friends have described you?
I think I was quite precocious. There's a story about, which I don't remember at all, but apparently in my grade one class, the teacher left the room briefly, which I guess you can't do these days, left us on our own. And when she came back, apparently I was in her chair at the front, directing everybody with what to do.
Naturally.
So, I don't know. It was a nice place to grow up. I didn't know anything else, of course. The Gold Coast, more specifically than in Brisbane, was home, and I'm probably the least suited person on the planet to live on the Gold Coast. I don't particularly like heat. I don't particularly like humidity. I like the concept of beaches, but I don't really spend any time at them, and I certainly don't surf or anything like that. So, it's a very pleasant and easy place to grow up. And it was not till much later, of course, I realised that it wasn't the most musically satisfying place to live either. So as a child, I guess I was very happy there.
You had diverse interests even back then. You told me a lovely story about your early interest in political science, which is an interest that you still have. Would you like to repeat that story of being in class and overhearing a conversation?
This would have been, I don't know, about grade five or six. And I think where this came from was the fact that I worshipped my grandfather, as so many of us do in life, I guess, and worshipped many of the things, therefore, that he did, like cricket, which I still very much enjoy. And he would always walk down to the shop every single morning to buy the paper, and I still love newspapers, absolutely religiously at 6 o'clock would turn on the evening news. And so from about the age of five, actually, as far as I can remember, I was also obsessed with watching the evening news. And I guess at first that was because of him, but later on it was out of a genuine interest for just the world in general and what was going on and trying to understand it. And I developed a very keen interest in politics early on, and I have no idea how. And I guess it would have been around grade five or six. And we had a composite level year class, and there was a sort of split, and I was off to one side doing something on a computer, and the teacher was teaching the other half of the class a politics lesson, and he was explaining the concept of how our system works, particularly in regards to the state system, and how governments have cabinets and the role of ministers and this sort of thing. And he was giving examples how we will have a minister who looks after transport and health and this sort of thing. And he would say, and then, you know, we have a transport minister who is I can't remember. And I yelled out the name because I watched the news every night. I knew all these people. And I yelled out the name, and he sort of stunned, looked over and said, yes, that's right. And anyway, this then went on through about half the cabinet as he was struggling to remember the names of these people. And I don't know if I just had good retention for such trivial information at the age of 9 or 10.
Well, it also shows a precociousness at that age. And again, you're taking over the class. Well done, Stuart.
Well,
we're going to talk about music, and where did that begin in your life, and who was responsible?
Well, I guess there were many different influences. My grandparents were keen amateur musicians. They'd been involved in particularly choral singing their whole life through church choirs and community singing and that sort of thing. My grandfather on my other side was dead before I was born, so I never knew him, but he was actually a piano teacher.
Interesting.
And apparently quite a good pianist. And so there was the impact of my grandparents, certainly. There was the impact, I guess, of being dragged along to church on a Sunday morning, and I was bored mindless and would always sit on the end of the row and stare at the organist and was quite interested in what she was doing. And then there was the impact around the grade two of the classroom music teacher who was quite a good amateur pianist, and the music teacher didn't work on a Friday. So on a Friday afternoon every week, he'd drag our whole class over to the music room and he'd just play the piano and we'd sing songs. And I can remember at the age of six, sort of always sitting right underneath him, staring up and thinking, you know, I want to do what he's doing.
There are a lot of sacrifices to be made by a child who's serious about music, as clearly you were. Sacrifices in practicing and generally learning on top of your other studies. How easy did you find that?
Well,
were you self-driven or were you pushed?
Well, yes and no. I was an appalling student. Actually, I was shocking. I mean, obviously, given I now do it for a living, I had some aptitude in it, and the first few years did come rather easily, and I did quite well at early exams and that sort of thing. And at that point, of course, it then started to get much more difficult, and I didn't like that suddenly I couldn't do everything instantly. And I became very embittered for a while and very lazy indeed. In fact, to the point where it took me years, you know, things like my teacher would give me technical exercises to develop the hands, and I'd do them with one hand and then think I'm bored now and not do it with the other. So I ended up at a point where my right hand was so much more developed than my left, and it took me years to fix that. And in fact, I'm still not sure they're completely equal today. So yeah, I was a terrible student, but always loved the music.
We'll come back to young Stuart shortly. We're up to your second choice of music, Stuart, and you've chosen a piece by Carl Vine, and it's performed by you and Timothy Young and recorded for 3MBS. What would you like to tell us about this piece?
Well, it's a fairly recent work of Carl Vine's, his Sonata for Four Hands Piano, and I love the genre of four hands. It's one of my favourite things to do. I love playing with Timothy Young, who's probably the most important teacher I've had. And I love this piece, and this is the final movement we're going to hear. It's quite exciting, and, well, you can judge for yourself if my left hand's keeping up with the right.
Thank you.
the final movement of the Sonata for Four Hands for Piano by Carl Vine. And performing were Timothy Young and Stuart Kelly, who's our guest on Reflections. Great choice, Stuart.
Great piece.
Great piece, yes. Stuart, how important was ANAM to you, the Australian National Academy of Music? It is for elite musicians. There's a very strong selection process. What did it do for you?
Well, it's probably, when I think back on it lately, the single most consequential thing in my entire life to this point, actually, not just musically, but in the fact that it moved me to Melbourne, which is somewhere I'm very happy and is, you know, culturally a much better fit for me, I guess. And the doors it's opened on many different levels. But, I mean, musically it's just was the most inspiring place to be. And to be somewhere where they really support you, you know, it's scholarship, you don't have the worry of fees. They pay you a small stipend to help with your living expenses. So you can really actually focus yourself. And it was really, I mean, I'd done a bachelor's degree, I'd done a master's degree, but it wasn't until ANAM that I really felt I got into gear and really, really worked hard and sorted out a lot of my issues. And you know, that's meant everything that's come after it, really.
You soon became rather well known as a collaborator in music, and that's a very important role. And what is it about collaborating with other artists? What are the special rewards of being a collaborator as a pianist?
Well, I think it's mostly I've got a short attention span. I don't like my own company very much. So, you know, the appeal of the solo piano life was never very strong for me. I didn't like the endless lonely hours practicing. I didn't like the endless or the thought of endless lonely travel if you become a successful touring solo pianist. And I mean, obviously the repertoire is wonderful and a lot of it I adore and a lot of it I still play. A lot of it I'd still like to learn in my spare time. But even the thought of a solo concert, you know, it strikes me that a solo piano recital, and I love going to them, but it strikes me that it's essentially a lecture from the pianist. Whereas as soon as there is at least one other person there, it's a conversation. And to me, that's so much more rewarding and so much more interesting. And I mean, you've got the collaborative process of how you put it together in the first place. And then there is the wonderful moment of performance when things can be spontaneous sometimes, things can go wrong sometimes. And when they're colleagues you've worked with a lot and people you learn to really trust, very special things can happen on stage. And I find that so exciting.
Well, it was pretty exciting the other night when I saw you working with Taran Fiebig. And you'd not rehearsed before, you'd not performed before, and she came out and sang a song with you accompanying that was just blissfully worked together. And that must be a very, very special skill.
Well, that's the very opposite of long-time colleagues who've got a deep working relationship. We
yes.
literally met side stage about a minute before we went on and did this thing. And it was a great thrill. She's a wonderful, wonderful artist, and that's a beautiful song by Poulenc. And that's what I live for in doing this. It's much more rewarding for me.
And you've collaborated with pianists, violinists. I notice Lawrence Matheson, with soprano Greta Bradman, William Hennessy, violinist, Wilma Smith. And Stephanie Farrans, Timothy Young, Paul Dean.
On.
It goes on and on.
Anyone will have me, really.
So you're sort of a pianistic tart.
Well, I guess I'm cheap. I don't know.
No.
The phone keeps ringing.
Well, the phone keeps ringing. It really must say something about you as a collaborator. How difficult is it to have a career in Australia as a pianist, particularly for someone at your age?
Oh, it's not easy. And you've certainly got to be open-minded. I mean, if I was sitting in my studio wanting to just play solo recitals every day and spend my life touring around this country doing that, you'd have a very deluded view of what was possible in the world. But if you are prepared to, you know, one day I might be coaching students from the piano, one day I might be going on a tour with a really great artist, one day I might be playing chamber music with friends, one day I might do a solo concert. You know, if you're up for anything, it makes life a lot easier, put it that way. But you have to have the skills to do all those jobs. And someone who's a fabulous pianist may be terrible as a collaborator or as a chamber musician. And you know, there's many different parts to the equation.
You've made a recording of Mahler's Second Symphony for two pianos, eight hands. And I wonder whether that has any impact on your next music choice.
It's interesting. No, I wasn't thinking of that at all. My next music choice is from Mahler's Second Symphony, but mainly because I wanted to include the Berlin Philharmonic. As from an orchestral standpoint, I can't think of a more inspiring ensemble. And I chose this mainly because, our topic today is surrounding Miflas, and I thought, well, maybe some Mahler with a little bit of voice involved.
Thank you.
Mezzo-soprano Magdalena Kozena was singing with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle, in that segment from the fourth movement of Mahler's Resurrection Symphony, the Symphony No. 2. And thank you very much to our special guest on Reflections, Australian pianist, teacher, producer and artistic director, Stuart Kelly. Thanks, Stuart. Let's talk now about being a teacher. You're a piano teacher with a difference, because you actually don't spend most of your time teaching piano. Can you tell us about that?
These days I don't. No, I spend a lot of time doing that in the past, but because I'm so involved in the world of collaborating and what used to be called accompanying, my main position in doing all of this now is at the VCA Secondary School, which is a wonderful institution, and also at the University of Melbourne. And it's really coaching, and you know, you're one-on-one with students. I predominantly find myself working with singers and string players. That's where I prefer to be, but I certainly work with students of all areas. And you know, I find very often it's really coaching, often in terms of aspects of style and interpretation and context and musical ideas, and it becomes a sort of a very different lesson to what they might be working on with their principal teacher, whose job often, particularly at a high school age, they're focused very on just getting the technical foundation and the sort of, you know, tools to play the instrument. So it leaves me the chance to talk about the artistic side of things, which is a very nice place to be.
I wonder what you like to see in a student, and to what extent students are expecting a full career out of what they're studying.
I think that varies wildly, and I've certainly met a lot of thoroughly delusional people in my time, but I think for the most part they're there. Most of the people I work with are there because for some reason there's a spark being lit in them, and you know, the greatest rewards often don't come from the most gifted musicians and most gifted students either. It's just to see an idea take on, and sometimes, you know, it could be something you've been hammering on for 6 months or a year, and suddenly one day you can just see the light switch go and it changes everything for them. And, you know, that, but, you know, there can be equally special moments. And I derive constant inspiration from it because, you know, I'm working with sometimes 12 and 13-year-olds. In fact, I worked last week with a 7-year-old cellist who's absolutely extraordinary. You know, I just find that so inspiring, working with these young players, very often who I think, you know, if this is more sophisticated than I'll ever be, and you're 14 years old or something, you know. So there's great inspiration comes from
it. Is it more than talent? Is it more than raw talent? Is there also temperament and personality?
Of course.
What about nerves?
It doesn't matter how talented you are. If you're not working extremely hard, you won't get there. You know, there's that famous story about Mozart supposedly getting very offended when someone said, "Oh, you're so gifted." He said, "Rubbish, I work 12 hours a day to achieve this." And, you know, the fact that people were lauding him as a genius, he actually found very offensive, apparently. And that's true of anyone who's done this. I don't care how gifted they are. At some point in their life, they've worked very, very hard.
Do you think that learning an instrument is important to a person's general education?
Oh, absolutely.
What does someone get out of learning an instrument?
Oh, I mean, where do you start? Discipline, ways of achieving sort of excellence and rigor and creative expression. And I mean, this is why there is endless studies about the benefits of music education. Do you necessarily have to learn an instrument? Probably not. You could do it through singing. You could do it through choirs. You know, but a solid education in music is, I mean, apart from being great for brain development and all that sort of stuff, it's just good for the soul. It's good for your humanity, I would have thought.
There's a lot of democratic stuff in playing in an ensemble, of course.
Of course. Probably why a lot of pianists are crazed egomaniacs.
Do you have any sense about how healthy music education is generally in a country like Australia? I suppose you don't have the comparison with Europe. But I have the sense that there are schools that specialise, but generally, in state-run schools, music education isn't the highest priority.
No, it's not. And it's a very mixed picture. I think it's very sad. I mean, I think it's something like 63% of Victorian primary schools have no music at all, which I just find absolutely...
That's ghastly.
...shocking. The best of what goes on here is superb. You know, there are schools that have phenomenal facilities, phenomenal staff, phenomenal ensembles. There are special places like where, I mean, I'm very lucky that I get to work in the places where the best of what's going on is happening largely. And there's no doubt in my mind that the best of the young students coming through now are better than they've ever been. And there's an alarming amount of them, actually, when you really look at it. But there's then this huge body of students who've never had anything at all. And, you know, I think that's so sad for them, just for their development as people, for their ability to engage with the art form, even as a listener or an audience member in the future. I don't see how they're going to find themselves in a concert hall having one of those transformative experiences that we all obviously have had at some point if they haven't been introduced, if the door is not open for them at some point. And I worry about that a lot, apart from, you know, the development to their own mind in all the ways that we've just talked, if they had the chance to do that in the past. And, you know, I'm fortunate I grew up in Queensland, where it's one of the shining elements of the education system up there is, and since the 70s, they were one of the first to have music in every school and instrumental programs in every state school, which is still the case now. I just couldn't believe it when I came to Victoria and heard these statistics.
Well, a great model for the rest of Australia. Let's hear your next piece of music, Stuart, and it's Night and Dreams by Schubert, an absolutely beautiful song.
600 songs of Schubert, how did I choose one? But Schubert had to be here and one of the songs had to be here.
And this particular singer, Matthias Gerner?
Well, it's a fabulous voice.
Speaks for himself, doesn't he? And Alexander Schmaltz is the pianist. Nacht und Traum, Night and Dreams by Franz Schubert. Matthias Gerner was the baritone and Alexander Schmaltz the pianist. And thank you very much, Stuart Kelly, for choosing that. And what a lovely introduction to the Melbourne International Festa of Lieder and Art Song, of which you are co-director, coming up shortly. Thank you for that. People may not know much about MIFLAS, so would you tell us a little bit about it, what it's about and who it's for?
Well, it's only the second year it's happened here in Melbourne, but it came out of an event that Patricia Price, a wonderful co-director and former head of voice at Whopper, who's now based here in Melbourne, she started this event in Perth 6 years ago out of a desire to provide better training to Australia's singers in this area. Lieder and Art Song is very often the poor cousin of opera. The singing students themselves often want to be the great divas. They want to be on stage. They want to have all the glamour of that. And so they see it as secondary or not as interesting or not as sexy. And therefore, they're pushed in certain directions. And, I mean, that couldn't be further from the truth, of course. And really, without a solid foundation in song singing, I don't think you can be a good opera singer. There's also then the question of how solo focused a lot of our courses are for pianists as well, and so they're churning out graduates who, you know, sure they can play every Chopin etude, but if you gave them that Schubert song that we just heard to sing with a singer, can they do it? Alarmingly not is often the case. So the idea of this festival was to bring pianists and singers together, train them in the art of Lieder and Art Song, and I was fortunate enough to be a participant last year because I wanted to work with Graham Johnson, who's the patron of the festival and who's come every year and who's really the doyen of song accompanists in the world. And I had such an extraordinary week, and the festival basically was ready to fall apart after the last one for various reasons, and someone dobbed me in and said, well, he might be able to help save it, and here we are. It's shortened my life a few months, several years, I think, over the last few months, but it's been a very rewarding thing to be part of, and we're almost here now, and we're going to have a very, very special festival. We've got 16 wonderful singers coming to take part. In fact, slightly more than that, because there's a quartet and 7 wonderful young Australian pianists who'll work with Graham Johnson over a week and then perform some concerts at the end of it. And yeah, it's just a very inspiring week.
The masterclasses are open to the public.
Yeah.
And I went to a masterclass last year with a very full week to follow and thought I'll squeeze one in. And I cancelled my week, Stuart. Graham Johnson is a revelation as a teacher. And I found that the teaching wasn't about the techniques of singing or piano playing. It was about life.
It really was, yeah. Mm. I was such a profoundly moving week, and which is why I got talked into adding this into everything else I do, and why I believe so much in helping it to continue, because it was just an extraordinary week. And I would say to people, you know, often with these sort of events, music lovers will choose to go to the concert to see the finished product. But in this case, and often in almost all cases actually, but never more than in this case, go to the classes, because that's where you'll find extraordinary inspiration. And yeah, it's you can't describe what he is like as a presenter, and when he is talking about this repertoire, which has been his entire life's work and a passion beyond belief. And there is nobody who knows more about these composers, about these songs, the poets themselves. He's just an incredible authority and speaks with such precision to the heart of matters and with such passion.
He sure does. And Lieder and Art Song has a reputation for being rather formal and traditional. And yet that's not what it's about at all,
no,
is it?
No, it's, I mean, it's life in song. It can be very funny, it can be very charming, it can be very sad. It's very often about love, almost always. It's very often about beautiful times in our lives. And it's a way of expressing things. It's taking beautiful words and putting beautiful music to it. It's nothing more complex than that. It doesn't need to be stuffy or elitist or anything like that. It is just great beauty. And for me, there is nothing more beautiful than having a beautiful voice, a nice pianist come together and realise words. I'm a great lover of words as well, and you combine it all. I think if I could actually spend my entire pianistic life just playing leader in art song, I'd be very happy with that. I used to think that. I don't know. I derive great pleasure from other things I do as well, but it's certainly one of my very favourite things to do.
I'd like to explore that with you shortly. That sounds fabulous, and clearly you've got a very strong aptitude for this sort of work. Telling stories in song is like opera, but it's different. There's a lot of emphasis on text and feeling and meaning.
It's actually much harder, and this is why it's so important for young singers to have this training, because you're there devoid of all those aids. You have no set, you have no costume, you have no props. You and the way you sell that text is all that can help to bring the story across. And so your job's actually much more difficult, and you have to understand the text at a much greater level, I think. And so does the pianist, importantly.
You can't. So it's not just all about the singer.
Oh, absolutely not. And the amount of great composers who find incredibly inventive ways of painting pictures of what is happening in the text in the way they write their piano accompaniments. And if you haven't thought about that in the way you prepare it, you can fundamentally ruin the performance. So, you know, it is an art of great subtlety. It is an art that, you know, to derive the greatest pleasure as a listener, you probably do need to have some degree of sophisticated knowledge about it all. But it doesn't mean you can't enjoy it and derive great pleasure from it without that either.
Let's hear from the master himself, Graham Johnson, and he's accompanying Angelika Kirschlager in this beautiful song, Eternal Love by Brahms. Would you like to say any more about it, Stuart?
Oh, not really. It's one of my favourite Brahms songs. That's why I chose it.
Wieder zu viel Sorgen.
The song Eternal Love by Brahms, his Opus 43. Angelika Kirschlager was the mezzo-soprano accompanied by Graham Johnson.
I was going to say, it's the most wonderful final line, that song. Iron and steel may melt, but our love cannot, you know.
Ah, isn't that beautiful? Beautiful. Thank you very much, Stuart Kelly, for choosing that. Stuart, one of the major things you do is as artistic director of Music by the Springs. It's very successful.
Well, it's our third year we're heading into. I mean, I feel like a giant fraud in a way running a chamber music festival at my stage, but I just thought, well, we'll give it a go and see if I can get some friends together to come and see if I can get some people to come and listen to us. And it's turned out to be something that's quite popular. So I'm very pleased to say it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a very beautiful part of the world.
And it's held early in the year, February?
In February, and we do it in this wonderfully intimate old hotel. And
at Hepburn Springs.
The sort of room that chamber music was designed to be heard in. So it's a real treat.
Google it, Music by the Springs. Stuart, I wonder whether you would like to see your career developing like Graham Johnson's and Geoffrey Parsons, because you have very similar skills and sensitivities.
Well, I certainly love playing with singers, and I'd certainly love to do a lot more of it. The leader thing is hard in this country. The language barrier makes it a bit more difficult in this country, that people haven't got such a natural affinity to European languages. But I would certainly like to see the understanding and appreciation of the art form grow in this country, hence my passion for MIFLAS and for getting audiences to come along and have this world opened up to them. But I equally love playing with a violinist or doing the piano duo stuff. Just music making with others, I think, will be the big, you know, story of my life, not necessarily boxing it into one area or another.
Well, we'd love to wish you every success with the Melbourne International Festival of Lieder and Art Song with that title, MIFLAS. Can you give us some details?
Well, it's all happening on the campus of the VCA Secondary School, which is at Miles Street in Southbank. Very, very easy to get to, right in the middle of the cultural precinct, between the 30th of June and the 5th of July. The whole schedule's on the website at MIFLAS, MIFLAS.com.au. And there are two public masterclasses most days, and then there are public concerts on the Wednesday evening, and then a big gala final concert on the Friday evening. All those details and how to, if you're coming along just to the masterclasses, it's $10 entry per day. You just turn up at the venue in the morning and you can come in, and then we will be selling tickets to the two concerts. And it's not a huge hall, so that probably will sell out. The details of that will all be up on the website shortly as well.
So I'll be blocking out the week. I won't do what I did last time and plan to go to a session. Blocking out the week, going to each of those masterclasses.
And we should mention the areas of focus this year, four composers, Schubert, Schumann, Fauré and Poulenc. And each day when there are two classes, there'll be one session focused on the two German composers and one session focused on the two French. And Graham Johnson, a great authority on all of them, of course, particularly Schubert, Fauré and Poulenc, who he's written sort of the seminal Bibles about in recent times.
And with Schubert, he's recorded the complete song repertoire for
First
Hyperion.
First one to do so. I think he's done the same with Schumann for Hyperion. He's done the same with Fauré. And I'm not sure if he's recorded the complete Poulenc, but he's just finished a book about all of the songs, and that's essentially half a biography. It's not even out yet, but will be coming soon.
So. Well, we're very lucky to have him in Melbourne. So look forward to seeing you there, Stuart, and also to hearing you on 3MBS in Melbourne in concert on Sunday nights.
Well, thanks for having me, Doug.
Thank you very much to our guest, pianist Stuart Kelly, and artistic director and many other things. Also to our technical producer, Stuart McMillan, our executive producer, Nikki Gilderdale. I'm Doug Beecroft.